It's just off the grid. I would love to do two.
But could you, so in depth.
I would love to get a part like that, like that, like you could.
What am I gonna do next year? If I have a 2-day leave next year, I'm gonna be really, I'm gonna come here for one day. There's a lot of sitting around.
Yeah, another draft in.
Well, not exactly your dissertation.
Well.
Let's not get here.
Well, the rest is just gonna be kind of a paint by numbers.
Yeah, the dissertation itself is so easy, it's the proposal that's hard.
Yeah. We talked about this, I'm doing a diorama.
It's no mobile, but it'll do.
So there was a, it took me 25 minutes to get to the Hicksville train station. No, just traffic was unbelievable. I had no, it's my first time going there and wow. It takes me just as long to get from Forest Hills here. It's crazy.
Welcome to the Drive East Club.
That's what it's called.
Oh yeah.
Feeling really sad for you guys out here. Don't have to cross bridges or anything. That's actually that psychosis.
So, does that look familiar?
Okay. No. Do photos for homes, which are, maybe that's how it went.
Yeah, but it's not like, you missed one, you missed one, you know?
Awesome.
They don't take
my cat. All the photos
my and it's interesting because there's a lot of psychiatric residents. So, the psychology things are kind of in the minority.
We can look at it in my email.
Yeah, all around New York. Pretty legitimate hospital.
I mean, I know I put it on it.
There's drugs.
And there was a lot of pictures of that I checked, and the information was at the bottom.
Is that yours?
Yeah, that's mine.
A lot of them.
I mean, I didn't take it. My photographer kind of took it. No idea.
Harry and Sarah.
My first project?
No, that was a video for another Sarah, presentation.
Well, that's all that shows up on your flash drive.
Anyway, that's not a problem because I have an email. So can I go into my email?
Well, I have to first connect to the internet.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll get some data. All right. If we want to, but just.
Yeah, I don't know.
Then I checked, and I was like, okay, here's all the photos, and the last thing was a presentation.
Right.
Yeah, I live 20 blocks down.
I'm aware of my... I was doing like 20 blocks. Oh, I'm going to be a fellow. So that's what I'm thinking, if you're doing it.
Okay.
Well, and you have a day out of it.
Yeah, not every meeting has been as great as every other one, but...
What day is it?
Okay. Can you just type in?
What happened to the flash drive?
I don't know. It could be that it doesn't read certain files because it's
No idea. Okay. Material for presentation. There we go. Just, do I need to download? I can download it so you can have it.
Yeah, sure.
Right? It's still PowerPoint, even though I do it on Mac. The only thing is that the font might come up all weird. Oh, so far so good. Because that's what happened when we presented at .com.
So you click on the name.
Okay, we need to change the color. Because it's not looking good there.
Oh. Okay.
Okay, let's see if we can. Is it all like that?
Yeah. Research, research.
Yeah, and everything else you can't see. Anybody knows how?
If, yeah, if you just go to like.
Okay. Design. Old. Oh, good point. Okay.
Yeah.
But then the white writing.
Okay, we'll find out. Let's see. What do we like? See, these are complete.
Something in chartreuse.
How about this? You can see this, right? Yeah. I mean, it's not as fancy as the other one, but I guess we'll live. All right. We good?
So I just want to introduce Sylvia. Sylvia Fiamenghi is an alumna of our program. She graduated last year. And she is a veteran of so many different coding teams of mine. It's unbelievable.
A lot.
She's coded for so many dissertations. And,
wow. It's been a lot.
And been a real veteran of all the wars.
What's the wars?
Coding team. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so Sylvia agreed to come and speak to us about qualitative research and coding, and her own dissertation was a qualitative research study, not a blog, but she's actually going to Italy next month. To live, she's a psychologist for NYU, and NYU has a campus in Florence, and Sylvia will be the chief psychologist at the Florence campus of NYU, and she's from Italy originally. So give her a warm welcome, everybody.
Thanks, guys, for being here at this insanely late hour. I really appreciate it, you coming. Sorry I couldn't make it any earlier. So even though I'm going to Florence, if you have any questions afterwards, if you have any questions afterwards, feel free to email me. That you'll find my email at the end of this and in this other thing that I'm going to give you. Okay, so qualitative Auerbach and Silverstein. So this is the model that I use for my dissertation that several people are using here. There is, if we have time, we'll go over this roadmap about qualitative studies and dissertation, if any of you. Any of you thinking about it? Qualitative dissertation, possibly? Not sure? No? Okay.
So there's some first year students.
Okay. Okay, so it's good to have all
from the whole of the world.
Okay. So that's good. It's like, it's good to have it as an option if you're not yet that far. I hear somebody else is very far with dissertation, so that's maybe just for this coding project. So, okay, so the model we've been using is Auerbach and Silverstein. This is not the only model of qualitative dissertation, qualitative research. There's many others. So it doesn't have to be this one. This is the one I'm familiar with and I found very helpful. So Auerbach and Silverstein do focus on qualitative, and what's the difference between qualitative and quantitative. So the main difference, in very concrete terms, is there's no numbers. The only number you have in a qualitative dissertation is your N number, which in this case is usually about 17, more give or take. It's once you reach a saturation, but it's usually around that. So there is no stats. The idea is that you're not trying to, it's a hypothesis generating research, which is different than quantitative, which is when you test a hypothesis. So here, you just don't have it. The idea is that it's based on grounded theory, which we're going to go down in a minute. But so you don't have enough information to test a hypothesis or to have one, because the populations that qualitative research is, you know, good for are the populations or the phenomena that have not been studied yet or not enough. And so what we do is that we take a small sample of subjects that are not trying to be representative of the whole population. So in quantitative, what we have is that we are trying to generalize our results. You know, if we have in quantitative, if we find something that is true of me but is not true of Jeff, then our results are not so good. In qualitative, we're doing something completely different. We are trying to focus on the specific subjective experiences of subjects, of a few subjects, and just what we do is that we talk about it. We talk about it in great detail, and we learn from them
they are, the, like I say here, they are the experts. We are not the experts. So we're sitting there, we're receiving from them what their experience of something was, whatever something may be. I helped coding a dissertation of another student that was about the experience of losing a parent while you're a child. My dissertation was the experience, the way in which being a clinical psychology doctoral student impacts your romantic relationship, and you'll have a snapshot of that when we do the exercise. So it can be literally anything. Another student did a study with underage prostitutes and what that experience was like for them, and there were some other details about it I don't recall. Mm-hmm. So we hear from them, and we sort of don't care how similar or diverse they are, because, again, we're not trying to generalize. We're trying to learn from them their specific experience. That's all that matters. Then from this experience, what we do, we use a narrative instead of a numeric approach. So, of course, they tell us their stories. This can happen in individual interviews or in groups. And then we listen to their narratives, and we create like sort of an interwoven narrative of this particular sample. And then what we do is that, let me see if I say this. Yes, right, we said that. And then we use grounded theory. So again, we don't have enough information, and so we base our results, we go from the ground up. So instead of having a hypothesis and we're testing it, we're going from the hypothesis down, we're going from the ground up. And then the way we generalize it is that once our study is done, we say, okay, for all these people that I saw, this was their experience. So maybe we could have a hypothesis that this happens for this larger population. However, we usually don't do this at the end of just one study. For example, if you read Auerbach and Silverstein's book, they did a very extensive series of studies on fathers. So you have the single, I don't remember now, but let's say, for example, the single fathers, the gay fathers, the something else fathers. And so then, the Haitian fathers, true. So you have like, you start being like, okay, so in my case, my students were for the most part CWP students, CID students. Okay, so this was the experience of CID students at CW Post. Then we do another study at Adelphi, PhD students. Oh, okay, so their experience was like this. So we start having different studies like this, and then at this point we can put them together and generate a hypothesis, and then we're going to test quantitatively. And then we're looking for generalizing our data, we're looking for significance, we're looking for other things. Here we're not looking for that. What we are... okay, let me see. Yeah, what I just described doing these different studies is called theoretical sampling. Okay? So, So how do we do this? I mean, first of all, what I like about this is that it's creative. What I often don't like about research is that I don't find much creativity in it, although there's not a lot of it. I seem not to find it in quantitative
research. What about the child psychotherapy process Q-score?
That was amazing. That was like, I loved it. I was still obsessed with the little reliability number that was giving me a lot of anxiety. So this one, this method is like, what I like about it is that there is no right or wrong way to do it. It's like, so I'll tell you how the coding is done, but two different sets of coders could come up to very different solutions, very different outcomes, and then once you bring in the theory and you come up with what I'll tell you about, it's called the theoretical construct, they can be so diverse. You know, like I'm pretty psychodynamic in nature, and my dissertation, I use like an analytic theory of the analytic third to explain my results. You know, my friend, who's like very CBT, in her dissertation, she had a very CBT approach to her result, and they both made sense, and I could have had a very completely different, maybe social psychology look at my data. It would have made sense too. That's what I kind of like, that you can really make it your own and turn it into what you find interesting. And to me, that was very important, because in the case of a dissertation, is a lot of your life. So the more interesting, the better. Okay, so how do we do it? Data collection. So first of all, there's a different way in which your participants are recruited. again, because we're not trying to generalize, we don't have to have random sampling, random assignment, there's none of that. We recruit via snowball sampling, which means literally like picture a snowball, and like it picks up the snow as it goes, you know, it rolls down a hill. So, for example, in my dissertation, I sent out a flyer here at CW Post and my externships, and some of my subjects were friends of my externship people, my externship friends, you know, that they were in their programs and they were willing to participate. So I didn't know these people, but what's called a convenient sample, like what I had available to me, knew these people, and so that's how the sampling happens, and that's also how some diversity happens, because, for example, I had some PhD students and some PsyD students and so on. So once you have your people, which is usually 17, as I said, is like what Auerbach and Silverstein consider the minimum. It can be more, but too many is really not that great, because then you have redundance of the data, it becomes more difficult to code, so...
Theoretical saturation.
Yes, so once you reach what's called theoretical saturation. So once in your interviews or groups, you start finding the same sort of themes, the same ideas, and you can tell that a material that's coming in has already come in, okay, then maybe you're in a good place. The number 17, which I think it was very sort of a rough estimate that Auerbach and Silverstein gave, you something that for students is helpful, because you need to know, okay, but how many do I need? And that's, if you follow their method, that's good enough, usually. Unless you can tell that it's not. Unless once you're at 17, depending on your topic, you're like, okay, so much different, oh, thank you, Jeff, so much different stuff is coming in that I obviously need more, and in which case it would be a decision of the researcher. So you have your people, and you can do either individual interviews or groups. Auerbach and Silverstein speak mostly about groups, because doing things in a group sort of elicits more topics. So let's say you'll see it in this transcript, like one person may say something, and another person can be, oh yes, I forgot about that, I had that experience too, but mine was a little different. So there is sort of going back and forth between people. Now, a disadvantage of a group is that if you have a shy person that has a hard time speaking up in a group, then you're kind of going to lose the experience of that person. And obviously, in a group, my group's about, I think, an hour and a half, you don't have as much attention to each individual as you would in an individual interview. So, pros and cons. Again, the colleague of mine that did her dissertation on underage prostitutes, she wasn't going to find groups of underage prostitutes, because nobody was going to like sit in a group and say, this is what I do. And also, it wasn't. There's a lot more psychology graduate students, thank God, than there are underage prostitutes. At least, they're easier to find. So, it was difficult enough for her to find 8 individuals to have interviews with. So, all these factors come into place. If you once you're done with these groups, which are the groups are very unstructured, there is a main question, which is your research question. So, for example, for me, it was how did your clinical psychology doctoral training impact your romantic relationship? That was my question, very vague, you know. Or my other colleague's question was what helped and hindered your experience of losing a parent while you're a child. So very, very broad. You start with that, and then you see where the group goes, and each group or each interview can go in a completely different place. Like the people can start speaking about very different things, or in a very different way, at least. I had some very serious group and some very funny ones. Like the one I gave you was the first one. It was actually pretty funny. And the topic was the same. And then you have 6, they suggest, sort of under questions, because sometimes it's hard for the group to go and get going with such an unstructured question, like it kind of dies, like people think of one thing and they're like, I'm done, that's all I have to say. But then if you really have to think about these other questions very, very well, because like your research really strongly depends on them. And so you, like for example, yes-no questions are no good follow-up questions, because they end with a yes or no. Sort of, you have to think about things that would be different from one person to another and things like that. So you do these, you go through the room and you ask the questions. People can go in order. People can sort of interrupt each other, you know, politely and have a group. Like you can have a process group and a therapy group, even though it's not therapy clearly. At the end of each group, you transcribe your group. Is very important that you do it, you know, verbatim. It's also very important that whatever goes to your coders is absolutely private. So I was especially careful about it because I was using coders from this program and I had students from this program as subject. So I was super, super careful about, I didn't even say husband or wife. Everybody turned into partner. I did not put, you know, whatever, if somebody's husband worked in, I don't know, something random like Wall Street, I won't say Wall Street, I'll say my husband worked at X. So I was very, very, very careful. Depending on your population, you always want to be careful, but you don't have to be as careful as I was. I even considered, I think I did remove all the sexes, of the partners. They were all partner and they were all XX. Okay. So at this point, you transcribe, you're ready to go. You need two coders. Let's say you're the main researcher and you need at least two coders. I mean, not at least, you need two coders. You're one and then there's the two of them. If you are the main researcher,
more than two.
You can use more than two if you want to. I don't recommend using like five. Because I think it's just really going to really confuse the outcome and make it so much more complicated. And I'm not sure it's going to make it necessarily that much better. Because once you have the material, I experienced that in both studies that overall there was a lot of agreement about how to go. Like there were different ideas and having three heads was great. I don't know that having like five or six heads would have improved it too much, but it would have made it so difficult to do. So, I mean, that's just my opinion, but yes, you can have more. Yes, so you have three. The most important thing is that the coders are independent, so that they work independently, which is actually very helpful because they can be in different places. One can be in Paris and one can be here, and it works anyway. So the first thing that you do is that you take the raw text. You take the raw text from your transcript. You'll have, in my case, I had four groups, four transcripts. And you start looking for the relevant text. So the relevant text is everything in the text that pertains to your research question. So you have your research question constantly in front of you, because if not, it's very easy to move into what is interesting versus what is not interesting. You know, something may not be interesting per se, but maybe pertaining to the research questions and the other way around. For example, when we did the study on the losing a parent, everything was very touching and very interesting, and there was a lot of stories about the funeral and the experience of the funeral. They were, you know, so even hard to read, but not relevant. They really had nothing to do with the research questions. So that, I found that study particularly was something that it was challenging to stick to this. But overall, finding relevant text doesn't take that long, because like you're just really going through transcripts and kind of like highlighting. That it's very important, like the way, and I have more on this in here, but it's the way in which you do it makes your life much easier. So it's very important that every coder does things in the same way. Because if everybody, you know, like the primary researcher then will be the first one to compare things, and then there will be meetings where you compare what you did to agree or disagree. And so everybody has to do it in the same way. So you can kind of like put them side by side and be like, oh, okay, you did this and I did this. You said that this part was relevant and this part wasn't. But if you kind of like start at that point putting the text all over and like organize it in a way that you think makes sense to you, this is not the time to do it. At this point, everybody does the same thing. So you take all the text that's not relevant and you kind of set it aside. You condense your relevant text and you send it to your primary researcher. If you're the primary researcher, you receive it from your other two coders. And you start putting it side by side. And you're like, okay, I'm the coder, Jeff's the coder. So, okay, oh, he did not highlight this because he didn't think this was relevant. Oh, I did. Let's see what the other coder did. And at this point, you kind of make executive decisions. So if everybody agrees, there is nothing to discuss at a meeting, no need to waste time. Everybody agrees, it's obviously relevant, done. And as the primary researcher, you go to that meeting with your coders after the relevant text prepared, where the only things that need to be discussed are the things where, like, only maybe two people highlighted something or did it in a little bit different way and one person didn't, so you have a conversation about it. And it doesn't have to be always that the majority wins. You know, maybe the one person had a better idea than the other two people, and so you kind of really want to listen to their opinion and hear what they have to say. Other times, obviously, the majority wins, and that easy, done. Okay, so you go through it, you have all the tests that are relevant, you have, at this point, from like, I don't know, 50 pages of transcript, you're probably down to, actually I can't say, because my research, everybody was a clinical psychology doctoral student. People were, one, very well educated, two, understanding the concept of what a group is, and what about staying on topic, and, you know, understood that this was my dissertation, and that we, you know, I had a really clear goal, and that they could relate to, so everybody was very rarely going off topic. The other research, the one with the dead parents, it was like people were all over the place. And it was like much more emotional. People had never talked about this, so you also have to be prepared for that. That done, you have your text. What do you do now? Now, like, the really hard part comes in. These are the repeating ideas. So from your text, you go, you kind of keep shrinking it to arrive to a point where you can sort of make conclusions on your material and bring in theory about it. The repeating ideas are pretty complicated, and they're not complicated per se, they're complicated to come up with, because an idea that is expressed by two participants is a repeating idea. An idea repeated twice by the same person is not. And it doesn't have to be like a paragraph, it can be a sentence. As long as it's a sentence that makes sense, that's an idea. So if I speak for like a minute about different things, you can find 8 ideas in that thing that I just said, or one. It's really up to you, and this is how it gets very different. You know, one coder may have, this is one idea, the other coder can have all these ideas. So what is a repeating idea? A repeating idea is something like, I don't know, in that text that you have, like, for example, people speak about how, I'll use something different so that I don't kind of ruin that. A repeating idea is something like, money was hard. Like, so the idea is that people, one person says, oh yeah, the first year I didn't realize it, but then by the third year I was really poor, and it was really hard, and it really impacted my relationship. Another person says, yeah, I used to have a salary, and then I didn't have it anymore, so money was hard. And then you can have within the topic of money, sometimes within an idea, you start with like money, and then you realize that they talk about it so much and in so many different ways, you can make different ideas about money, because maybe money is really a big deal in this research. I didn't know that before I saw, I mean, I didn't for myself, I knew it for myself, but I didn't know that necessarily it was going to turn out that way. But then when we looked at the text, everyone was talking about money in so many different ways, money in terms of guilt, money in terms of I depend on my partner, money in terms of like we have no time or money for fun. So you can diversify that, and you can play with your text. So if you have like a string of something here and you have like a more broad paragraph that includes different things, you can split it up to make 2 ideas. And in general, both with the relevant text and with the repeating ideas, the more the merrier. Like, don't be stingy with the relevant text. Like, when in doubt, keep it in. You know, you can always leave it out later, which is something I didn't say, that you have like orphan text and orphan ideas. So you don't have, you know, of course, like once you have the relevant text, whatever is not relevant is called orphan text. And the same, I'm sorry. That's one thing. The orphan text comes in with the repeating ideas. Once you start finding ideas within the text, there's text that doesn't go into it. There's maybe just one line that one person said. For example, you actually see it. Somebody in my research said something about sex going down in her relationship while she was in grad school. She's the only one that said it in the entire study. So that was quite interesting, and I was hoping, well, it was not repeating, you know, so that went into orphan text. Sadly, I mean, I mentioned it in my results, you know, but it wasn't a repeating idea. It was just one person that had that experience, or at least that reported it. So the repeating ideas, I'm going to give you guys this that goes more in detail. I want to make sure that we get to the example. Use the find, like the search find button in Word. That is a lifesaver, because you are talking about 50 pages of stuff. And it's really like overwhelming. When you look at it, you're like, oh my gosh. But what you do is that, first of all, you need your text to be by participant. So when you're done with the repeat with relevant text, you have participant like P1, P2, P3, P50, I mean, usually have P17 max. But you have all the things that P1 said and they are relevant, you put them together. And then you go to P2. Because that way is much easier to handle. You'll start with P1 and P1 will say, money was hard. Okay, money was hard. And you put it in a different document, right? As a repeating idea number one, money was hard. And that's P1. Then you go down and you see, does P1 say anything else about money? Oh, yeah, here. He says something about not having money for having fun. Put it together. For the moment, you can always separate it. Then you go down to P2. Does he say anything like P1? Oh, yeah, he does. Oh, no, he doesn't. And so you go down P1, P2, P3, P17, and then you have, like, a bunch of stuff about money, and then you can play with it. Like, okay, how many ideas is this? How do I want to split it? And so on. Once you're done with the money, you go back to P1, and you start with, okay, what else does he say? The second thing he says is, I was very tired. Was anybody else very tired? And so you kind of go down like this. The reason why I'm talking about the search and find in the Word document is because you start really knowing this text in and out as you do this. And you're like, oh, no, I remember. Somebody said that. Who said that before? Like, oh, I don't know. But, like, if you remember, like, a word, you can put it in and the computer will find it for you. So it's very helpful. Another very helpful thing, when you do the relevant text... when you do the repeating ideas. When you do the repeating ideas, if there's a theme that keeps coming up, like money, put the little word money next to it. It's not the name of the theme. Themes are the next step. It's not the name. It's not the actual name of the theme, but it will help you again with the find button, and it will kind of like help you organize things. You can, if you put the little, every time you find something that has to do with money, you put the little word money next to it. When you do the search thing, the computer will find everything that has the little word money next to it, so it'll be much easier to find. It seems like a minor thing, but it can save hours. So it's pretty important. So what you do, every coder has the repeating ideas. Every coder goes through it and has the repeating ideas, comes up with, between 60 and 80 is often what people find, repeating ideas. And then you have one, two, or three meetings, this is a long one, where you start comparing. First of all, the primary researcher receives the repeating ideas of the other coders, looks at them, and starts doing the same thing that we did with the text. You look at it, you put them side by side, and you're like, oh, okay, so, oh, how did I use, oh, I used this text like this, but Jeff used it differently. But this other person did it like me. This is something I want to talk about. If everybody does the same thing, which sometimes happens because it's blatant, nothing to discuss, you know. There is an idea. What is to discuss is still the title, because a repeating idea will have a title that is something like, I was tired. It looks like a quote. It can be a quote. Actually, I didn't do it. You learn as you go. But we kind of created summary fake things that look like quotes. We didn't realize it. But I think it's better within your text that your participants already gave you. Pick one that is the perfect title or that seems like the best title for that idea and use that as the repeating idea. So what title? That's a good question. And also the... what are we trying to convey? How many ideas can we really create out of this money thing? These are all conversations that you have with your coders. And the more brilliant the coders, the better, because that's what really makes the research good. So this takes a while, and you go through it side by side until you really come up with a final master list of repeating ideas. And the way that you have it is that you'll have, for each person, and then for the final master list, the title and all the text that belongs underneath. It's very important to leave it there and to at least save a document and have it at some place with the ideas and the text, because in the end of your research you'll have to kind of like show how you got there, you know, because how did you get from all these transcripts to these like two constructs? Well, this is how we did it, so you have to be able to show it. Okay, so at this point you're almost done and you have to go to the themes. So the themes are coherent categories. like we're talking about the different ways in which money is a problem, a theme can be financial difficulties, financial struggle, guilt. Guilt can be another theme. And for example, guilt can have some money in it and some I have no time for my partner in it. Very different things. So you put ideas 2, 3, 4. It has to be at least 2, depending how many you have. You put multiple ideas that go together. For example, I have no money to contribute to the family and I have no time to contribute to the family. I feel guilty. Those two go into guilt. And that's your theme. Each coder, including the primary researcher, you do the themes. You come up with your master list of themes, which is a combination of the three. And again, same system. If everybody agrees, nothing to discuss. If everybody disagrees, something to discuss. And the titles of the theme are kind of important. And so that's where like the brainstorming comes into place, and it's nice. You do that. Coders are laid off. They're done. You don't need them anymore. They are...
So they basically underscore relevant text, they place relevant text into mm-hmm. repeating ideas,
mm-hmm.
and then they take the repeating ideas and organize them
into themes. And then they're done.
Now, how many repeating ideas on average?
60 to 80.
60 to 80
themes? 20-ish. It doesn't. I don't know what the range was. It was most often it's around 20, something like 20 or 30, something like that. They say it in the book,
okay. But
something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because then the next step, you kind of like shrink progressively, mm-hmm. and then I hate how my little arrows got all moved. But the next thing that you do is that this was. For a dissertation, but you know, it doesn't have to be a faculty supervisor. You know, if you're doing it as an independent researcher, you won't have a faculty supervisor. But then you go from the themes to the theoretical constructs. And that's where I thought, because I like writing and I like psychoanalytic theory, so like that's where the fun part came into place for me. For some people, it may not be the fun part, it kind of depends. But what you want is like taking your results, so from the ground up, and taking the theory, so from the top down, and be like, how do they go together? How do I understand my results? How do they make sense at all? And so you have a theory. This was a question that actually is often asked, like, should you have a theory before you start? Should you have a theoretical framework that you want to fit it in before you start? Personally, I don't think so. I didn't have it, and I was very glad I didn't, because it was a much more sort of open-ended process. I mean, it was very likely that it was going to, for me, be something psychodynamic, because that's the way I think. And so it was very unlikely I was going to end up with a behavioral theory, just because I don't care for them. And neither did my, you know, my chair was Bob, he cared even less, and so it didn't happen. But outside of maybe that, we had no idea where we were going to go. And then we ended up with like a theory of the analytic third and kind of used that, and it was really fun. So that's my recommendation. Don't have one to start. But if you feel more comfortable with like initial ideas, then that's okay too. As long as you're very careful, if you do have a theory at the beginning, be careful to not really try to shove your results and create results that fit your theory, because it kind of defeats the point. And be open to different things that you can find.
Then it would be hypothesis testing.
Exactly.
This method is designed to generate hypotheses.
Exactly. So that's the point. Like, it's very difficult to not try to test something if you already have something to start with. At least that's my perception. Mm-hmm. The construct, I mean, it's usually like I had 4. You had a question?
Yeah, I do. I mean, don't you, in a sense, have a hypothesis in the sense, you know, we have the null hypothesis, and then that there is basically the answer could have been it has no effect on our relationship. But
yes.
You had a hypothesis, and you had a hypothesis that there would be some kind of effect.
I guess you're right. In a very broad way, but we could have had that outcome. The thing is that these questions are so broad, like about human experience, that as humans we have experiences, and so they're really rarely you would find a group of people that said, yeah, I had no experience at all of this. Like, for example, if you think of my colleague that did like what helped or hinder your experience of losing a parent, could have said nothing, but I don't know. It's like quite unlikely. So I guess that's sort of like that's why the broader the question, the better. And and in a way, like I think that that's actually a very good criticism. Like I think that if I were to go back, I would probably even broaden my question more. It's sort of hard to do, like, you know, at the beginning, but like that would be my suggestion. We don't speak about null hypothesis because it's not quantitative and we're not testing. But yeah, technically you could. You could have a study that says, well, nobody said that they had any experience at all. Nobody had anything to say. It's kind of unlikely, but possible. So, let me see. Did that answer the question?
Yeah, I just meant more, not that someone would say I have no experience, but like, yeah, I don't think the doctoral program affected my relationship.
Yes.
Sort of thing, yeah.
And that's fine. You know, it would be a totally fine answer. I guess that, I mean... that would be, okay, this person, or even this group, didn't find that this was at all something that impacted them. And so in that case, it's like, okay, then maybe this is a topic that was not studied, and maybe it's not so worth studying. Maybe there's not much there, which sometimes it's the case. You know, it kind of saves a lot. The research is quite cheap, and so it saves a lot of time and money if we don't go do quantitative research on something that... No, it's kind of not so relevant. Maybe I think it is, and maybe it is not. So yes, definitely. So the constructs. The constructs are usually like, it can be two, it can be three, it can be four. And the ways in which you then relate them is sort of like, for me, it was like one thing that led to another that led to another. So I use different, this is a very difficult thing to kind of like report, theorize, like in words like this. If you read a study, it will be so much easier to understand what the concept of theoretical constructs are. But for example, for me was the different things that Lou Aron and Jessica Benjamin spoke about in their articles about the analytic third. So I kind of reused, like totally recycled some constructs that they came up with and applied them to. Yes.
Themes.
To my themes. So, and of course I said that I did, I didn't take their ideas. I said this is the concept that we're using. So you don't have to come up with the concept and invent them. There's many out there, like for example, Olivia's research was using concepts of like intercultural, bicultural literature. Now I don't remember what it was, but there's stuff out there and she's like, oh, this is what applies to my research. And so that's what she used. So how do you present it? You come up with this a theoretical narrative, which summarizes the experience of your participants in a story. So it's literally a story, and like mine started with like, our participants came to grad school not knowing what was going to happen, you know, and then you kind of, in this narrative, you use your ideas, your themes, and your constructs, and you kind of like really tell the story as you go about sort of what happened, almost as if you take everybody and you put them in as if they're one person. And then you, of course, speak about the difference. Like, oh, some people had really were actually expecting it to be much worse versus other people came completely unprepared to what they were going to face. And then, so this or this and this can happen. And then you come up with this, like, story, which, again, when I tell you, like, these two parts are very difficult to, like, describe, but if you read it, it's very intuitive. So I am very happy to, like, for example, share mine and for everybody to, like, read it. And, it doesn't have to be a masterpiece. It gets the point. And you can find probably much better ones in Auerbach and Silverstein's book. They have...
In the appendices.
Yeah, in the appendices. You can really see what their narrative is, because that's the only way in which... And then you can make it yours. It doesn't have to be like theirs. It doesn't have to be like mine. It's just like, oh... Take an idea from me, take an idea from them, take an idea from Jessica, take an idea from Olivia, and, like, make your own. The main point that you want to bring across is that you want to tell their story. That's what you're trying to do. So however you do it, it's fine. You want their story to make sense within, like, a theoretical understanding of things. So this was a lot of stuff. Before we move on to this exercise, any questions? Yeah.
I'm just saying something because I've used this on coding for a couple of dissertations, and something now to also think about that made it easier is I worked on a dissertation where they use online chat groups.
Okay.
So you don't even have to have people come in to talk. You can set up a chat group online.
Yeah.
And when, and she ended up getting a lot of information because it's just so much more accessible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you do a lot of transcribing?
Yeah, we did. Oh, we had a lot of fun reading.
Well, I guess that it was already
yeah,
transcribed.
But you have more to read, I guess, because mm-hmm. you can have a lot more information. I think.
Yeah.
It's not as time limited. And I guess it's also pretty cheap.
Yeah.
A copy of Friday, not coming anywhere. Yeah, it's just
it is. It, so this is also what I like. Like, it's so flexible. You can do interviews, you can do groups, you can do online chat. You can find different ways to collect your data, and it's pretty important because this is usually a very difficult thing. And you can access accessible groups.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, I remember when I started, Danielle had me work on a population of amputees and people that were sexually attracted to amputees. Now, this was a very difficult population to like go and research because these people did not want to talk about it. So, you know, maybe asking for access to something that already exists in their website, their anonymous chats, would have been like a way to do it. So that's a great idea. We did not get to talk to anyone, so that was... Any other questions? Thoughts, comments? Okay, so I have two things. We have the exercise that basically this is like the very first one of my transcript, not like the very beginning of one. We were like half the way through our main question. We hadn't even gone down to the sub questions. And what I'm thinking of doing is that we can each take a few minutes to like read it and literally code it. So we'll have the relevant text, we'll have the repeating ideas, and we'll come up with themes, whatever it is. The other thing that I have that I don't know if we'll get to, but I can definitely give it to you guys, and I can also email it to Jeff and he can then share it, is this little thing, is a qualitative dissertation roadmap, and is step by step. It's more in detail than what I said today, more like the nitty-gritty, if you're actually finding yourself doing it, IRB and all that kind of stuff. So it's here, and it kind of starts with the pros and cons and moves on. So maybe this for you guys to take a look on your own if you want, later in 3 years when the time comes. And we can do the exercise. All right, so why don't we start? Wait, no, okay. I didn't use the fancy.
Oh, that's over.
So
when we read this, we're
underlining
relevant text.
And what is the question?
The question is that right at the top, the main question that we start today is has your doctoral training in clinical psychology impacted your romantic relationship? So keep that question in mind and highlight anything that is relevant to it, okay? Question.
Mm-hmm. I can underline. How much do I underline as far as I see this is the important part. The detail, are the details important? Like I'm describing, like I know what the theme is already in the first paragraph sort
mm-hmm.
of thing, but then goes on to explain details. Are those details considered relevant text or are they
yes.
just reinforcers?
The details are relevant because they could turn into like many different ideas. You know, you don't know in your 50 pages if that will repeat. So, as I said, like be generous, keep more rather than less.
I mean, just because if I can talk specifically, like I'm
mm-hmm.
so far away from home now, okay, but then I leave at 5:30 in the morning. Do I care that they left at 5:30 in the morning specifically, or is it
yes.
just the first sentence?
No, you do, because you'll
it's
see.
It's relevant to the impact of a romantic relationship.
Okay.
So you know,
you understand what I'm saying. The topic sentence kind of hits the point, and then
yeah.
Yes. No. It's a good question. It's like if it is at all, it seems like it could be related. So if you leave at 5:30 in the morning and your partner is asleep, you don't even see her or him until the evening, and maybe he's asleep already when you come home. So that's kind of relevant to
okay.
the relationship. So that's an example.
Do you usually do this with different colored markers or?
No, I didn't say that, but like in real life, don't put it on paper. That's only good on the computer. You don't want anything on paper because what are you gonna do with it? You know, instead of the computer, you can just cut. And then you receive different documents, and then you can cut and paste. It's so much easier. So I just, you know, do highlighting on the computer. It's so much easier to have it on the computer. I think that like the time when they didn't have it was a much worse time for qualitative dissertation. Maybe that's why I didn't develop until later.
So you use different colors on your.
I just only highlighted what's relevant and didn't whatever it's not.
Okay.
I just kept it at that.
Okay.
You could have, if it's helpful, you know, in terms of like recognizing the document, once you receive it from your coders, you could have each person a different color. So that you immediately can see which one is which when you have the documents side by side. And I literally open them on my screen, like side by side, and like batch them and put them next to each other. Mm-hmm. So it was really easy to see who cut what out. Mm-hmm. And it was actually easier. I asked them to not cut the unrelevant text because it was easier for me to see it instead of if you like compress then I have to find where is what, but if you just like leave it and leave the blank part that's not highlighted, it's very easy for me to see and then I can cut it and you know and then I gave back to them just the relevant once we came up with it. So these details like seem like nothing, but when we did it for Jessica it was a long process, you know, because we didn't have these little fine things, you know, we did what we did and then she was stuck with us each doing something different. So How are we doing? You will have another couple of minutes with them, even if you don't do it all. Like, I just kind of cut a piece, but, you know.
Just an example, so.
All right.
So is there anybody that was comfortable saying, like, okay, this part I cut out, I'm confident it wasn't part of the text. Let's see. Start with 36. Is there something that was completely irrelevant?
Like a block of text? Or
block of text, a part, like something that you left out and you were pretty confident, okay, I left this out, I think it's just not relevant. Yeah.
was talking about what about the traffic here.
Right, I agree.
I definitely left that out as well.
That's on the last page?
Yeah, the, towards the end. Where she talks about her partner really being angry in traffic, and it seems like she's trying to make a point, but then the point is kind of lost, and it turns into just the traffic. So that, I would agree that that's something that doesn't apply. Okay. So, for example, how about the parentheses, participants laugh? Is that, does that need to go in? No, right? Because it doesn't tell us anything. But differently, where we have all participants agree, that is majorly relevant, because that, like, one statement that all participants agree is a repeating idea. Because they agree. They don't have to say anything else. They're like, yes, I agree. I had it too. That's how people communicate. They don't have to, like, and my experience was, and this is sort of, like, not so common, so that's very important. Even, like, even if we didn't, in stage two, even if we didn't have the parentheses, all participants agree, even the yeah, that's agreement. That person's expressing agreement, so that counts. Mm-hmm. Of course, if you have...
But you're talking about the clinic being a traumatic experience.
Right. So one person says, the clinic was a pretty traumatic experience, and another person says, yeah. They are agreeing. So this, if you didn't have anything else in the entire text, which I guarantee that we did, but if you didn't have anything else about the clinic being traumatic, it's fine. You have a repeating idea right there. One person says it, the other person agrees. There's a repeating idea. So this is why, though, it's very important that next to statements like, yeah, yes, me too, you put the participant that says it. Because if I say it and then I repeat yeah to myself, that is not a repeating idea. Yes.
I think you brought up the saying the clinic is a pretty traumatic experience, because that in and of itself is not relevant. But I think it's in agreement about mental exhaustion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, then just, if they started talking about how hard the clinic is, without tying it in, that wouldn't be relevant.
Mm-hmm.
And they're talking about, like, in the context, but in general, they're talking about trauma. So, like, if you want, like, you're right, that alone, taking three out of context would be difficult to, like, relate.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, it's such a broad content that they have a lot more about the clinic. But the clinic being traumatic, if one person in a relationship is experiencing something traumatic, like the other participant says about the ER, like something happens to the relationship, because in the balance there, what does the other do with this person freaking out? So that's, in a way, that's how it relates. You know, you have, that's why more words the better. It's good when you want, like, your participants to come out from your research. So use a lot of quotes. Like, I use a ton of quotes to show what I'm talking about. Like, this is what they're saying. I don't need to, like, go out of my way to make it up, because they're saying it already. Yes?
I guess what I'm thinking, though, is that they explicitly say that the trauma has an effect on the relationship.
You're right. You're right. So I guess that in this case, like, if you take it completely alone,
yeah,
completely out of context, that particular example maybe wasn't great. But because there's so much to it, then it makes sense.
Right,
yeah. So I just made that example that we had here just to tell you how little, like, in terms of words, a repeating idea can be. So, like, if I said, let's say if this sentence, instead of being the clinic was a pretty traumatic experience, was like, the clinic was a pretty traumatic experience to my relationship, for example, you know, more explicit, it's enough. That's sort of like what I was wanting to come across, right? But yes, it's very important that whenever, because then once you take it all out of context, once the text leaves with a particular transcript, then it's difficult for it. It all has to make sense. Like, each sentence alone has to have meaning. If it doesn't have meaning, then it's like, what is this? What is this? Like, it's nothing anymore. So yes, that is actually a very good point, that you want everything to make sense in and of itself. Let's see. How about the student that talks about being in a long-distance relationship, P2 on page 2? The progress of her relationship. What do you guys think about that one? Has anybody left it out or included it?
I included it.
Okay.
Because it is related to grad school. It doesn't necessarily, I don't think it'll lead to a repeating idea.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she may be the only one that's in a long-distance relationship. But certainly, in some way, having a long-distance relationship was affected by her grad school or vice versa.
Or vice versa. Absolutely. So this is one that actually I remember even in the discussion with my tutors was kind of like, oh, I don't know. Yes, no. So it's unclear. So you leave it and then you see what happens. You know, is it going to turn into an idea? Yes, no. It can always lose time later to take it out. Even though in itself, it's not so relevant at this point. She's kind of talking about her relationship. But then if we have 10 students with a long distance relationship, then there's a whole thing that comes up about the students that have the living boyfriend and the ones that have the long distance marriage or whatever, right? Let me think. I don't think that we have time to go through the whole thing in detail. I just kind of. So I put little words next to it already for myself, like little notes that I made. I wrote like different years in the clinic or in the program or choosing the partner over the program. For example, look at P1 in page 1. She's the one that speaks about the sex going down. In this paragraph, she's expressing so many ideas. Like this thing, if you take it apart, like when we actually did it, like this paragraph had so much stuff. I think her paragraph went into like 3 or 4 different ideas. And that's fine. Some are just really rich. Okay? All right, so again, we kind of have to be more flexible because we don't have much time, but let's think of ideas. Let's look, for example, at this one because it's so rich. Like, let's look at P1 alone, like the first page, P1. Let's divide what she's saying into ideas, and let's see how many ideas we come up with and what that looks like. So let's go down in text because we don't have time to review all the ideas in this whole thing.
Right.
Okay?
Well, let me start.
Yeah.
She says, I think it is relevant here. I think it's not just time. So you have to. She's admitting that time is a factor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's agreeing with previous participants. So I'd say time would have to be the first.
Yeah.
Idea.
So time is already could definitely be already an idea. That's how you want to use her text and relate it to another person because maybe you only have one person that speaks about time and it's like, oh, here does another person. Let me take that and use it for this. I think a very important thing I didn't say is that you only use a text one time. You can't use the same text twice, right? So this is what Jeff said is very important because if you use her first sentence to relate to another idea about time, that's gone. You can't reuse that same sentence for another idea. Each piece goes only once because it's not a disaster you can come up with. I don't know. It's, one's experience is used too many times, it becomes too relevant, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's one. Then what else? From the idea of mental health, so your mental health is impacted. One more.
Sex.
She got bitchier, yeah, so like your attitude.
Now is that mental health or is that something different?
I mean, it's how you're reacting and how you're coming across other people.
I mean, you could tie that into stress and anxiety too. I kind of, in my head, put them all just under mood.
Mm-hmm. See, what you guys are doing is exactly what you would do in a coding meeting. You know, you would have a person be like, oh, I separated because of this reason, and that's valid. Or I put it together because of this reason, and that's valid. So once you have all of your tests, you're like, okay, how do we want to do it? Can we have both? Do we have enough of this that we can have both concepts and there's enough text for both concepts? We don't need all the text in one thing. You can, if you have like 5 ideas under the same text, fine, you can take 2 and separate it and make another. So sometimes you have to make decisions. You're like, okay, no, we're just gonna go with like it's all under mental health, or no, if one is aspect towards others, because there's a lot about this, so it's worth stressing this, or it's all in one big pot. So this is my good example. So we have the money down there, right? The internship money that comes in.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's...
I also put having more free time makes it easier.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, definitely, absolutely. And then a lot of, even above, like they were talking about the difference in different years in the program, how there was like a repeating thing about how different years in the programs are different.
Yeah.
So that's definitely an idea that many are expressing.
Are those different ideas, though? I mean, the opposite of each other? That I have less time for each other, it hurts the relationship. Now we have more time, it helps the relationship. And those separate ideas, or is that one concept?
That's a very good question. Either way, like, I mean, again, up to you. But they both would make sense. Like, it makes sense to put them together, it makes sense to put them separately, depending on how you want to use the text. And so, valid, each way. Yes?
I mean, also, I mean, they could be repeating ideas that are going under the same theme of the year in the program, or the amount of time I have.
Oh, yeah, it would definitely be a repeating idea either way. I was just thinking within the same person, sort of thing.
Within?
Within the same person, is that a different? Well, it could be either way, but we're only looking at this person.
Right, you're right.
So I was just wondering if that would go up under my time heading, or if that would.
I guess if you're the same person, it would probably be the same one, but again, it doesn't have to be. It depends, like, because now we're kind of like taking it apart in one small snapshot, but it depends how what others are saying. And I think that your comment is also very relevant. Let's keep the final goal in mind, because it's very easy to get lost in this series of meetings about repeating ideas about, oh, do we want it this way, do we want it that way? But then if you realize that there's one
goal... the same theme, mm-hmm. ultimately.
So
exactly.
It would fall under the time theme, then,
yes.
Whether we're saying more time, good, less time, bad.
Yeah.
And there's not like a less time theme and a more time theme.
And at the same time, though, it's worth, like, we also still have to think about each step, because then when you put your narrative, like, you can't just like think of themes, like they're just kind of like the ending point.
Mm-hmm.
But you sort of go through, like some students say that, you know, not having time. Some students had the experience that when they had a lot more time together, the quality of life was better, their academic outcome was better, whatever. So it's worth keeping it in mind, not going crazy over it, because when the details are small. Okay.
I have a small question. When you do give the transcripts to your coders, do you give it to them with the research question?
Yes.
The researcher doesn't have the research question in mind. Like, I actually recommend you have it.
Oh, I suppose so. Yeah, I don't know why. I just thought, because it could lead to some biases, but I guess that's why you have multiple coders.
Yes, you have multiple coders to look at it differently, but you have, I actually recommend that you kind of like physically put it in front of you, because it's so easy to like get distracted, like meditation. Go back to the research question, because it's very easy to get tracked away. It doesn't seem like it, but like now we're looking at 4 pages. We're talking about 50 pages once you're doing it. So, okay, so I guess we got the gist. We're talking about themes, sort of. We already kind of, this happens in the actual coding, like, but at the end of your meeting with the repeating ideas, you already know your themes. So you know this text in and out, and you already have all of your themes in mind, more or less, and that's why, like, the themes really take a week. From the end of the meeting of the repeating ideas, in a week, I had all my themes and all my quarters of the themes. Because it's very, now you only have, like, also because to go from repeating ideas to themes, you kind of, but you don't really need the text under the repeating ideas. You just have 60 things that have to become 20. And so,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's pretty simple to, like, group them together.
So you have, rough on average, 3 repeating ideas per theme.
About 3,
yeah.
2, 3, 4. Depending
right.
on how you want to organize it, but that's pretty simple. It's not, it's very important, especially the titles that you use, because they really kind of then stimulate your contract.
Mm-hmm.
But like the big time chunk is the repeating ideas. I did, for my coders, we did 2 weeks for relevant text, and then it was a month for repeating ideas, and then 1 week for the, so that's how much we took,
mm-hmm.
but I guess it depends on how much time coders have, but I was, I'm keeping up with it. But, yes, somebody had a question?
The other question I had was just repeating ideas, and I think I know the answer, are across transcripts, not just within one group. Right?
Yes.
So if someone says something one time, nobody mentions it in this meeting, but in another meeting.
Yes. You're just doing groups for, like, convenience, yeah, because it would be, you know, sort of overwhelming and very difficult for, like, 15 people, 17 people to be in one room, so like smaller groups like are more productive and more intimate in that sense. But technically, you practically have one giant group. You look at it as if everybody's in the same room. And that's why I don't do, like, the participants, I number them P1 through P17. It's not P1, group 1. Like, groups don't matter the minute that they're over. Okay. So Teams, what kind of, I mean, it's kind of hard to do it just with this, but like, if you just had top of your head, think about some themes that may have come up from this.
Time.
Mental health. The year that you're in.
And how that impacts like academic progress or something like that. Yes, absolutely. So professional development, identity, and
partner development,
that was actually a very big one. So these are examples. Like, of course, like it's hard to do without all the text in front of you, but this is sort of what we do. And again, we couldn't do theoretical constructs here because it's impossible to do it like this. You have to have all the material, and then you work with the theory, you work with the literature, and kind of like get your creative juices going. So I guess that would be it.
Any questions for Sylvia?
Oh, how I got interested? Yeah. It's a funny story. Like, I was going crazy with finding my dissertation topic because I really wanted my second year project with Jill, now Hillary's class, before it was Jill's class, and it was the first semester of the second year. And I really wanted that to be my dissertation. And I really was not finding it, and I really was having a hard time and have ideas of, you know, whatever. And I go to my husband, and he's watching South Park, and I am, like, ranting about this thing that I've ranted about already several times. And he's like, I'm so sorry. Oh, it sounds terrible. And then I, like, got so frustrated because I was like, you're not listening. And I remember, like, I got so mad, you know, and then in 2 seconds, I was like, you just gave me a fantastic idea. I said, really? I was like, yes! And so I did it, you know, I talked about it with my friends the next day, and, like, everybody seemed to, I mean, we had already talked about it informally, yeah. Like, there was, you know, we had kind of shared with each other how things were changing as a result of this, And then I kind of realized that we as psychologists are very different than undergraduate students. It's not that a chemistry graduate student is not busy, but they're not learning about humanity and human experiences and relationships. And there's no expert, and there's no, none of that is going on. So we're kind of unique in that. And it was a really fun dissertation. We did a lot of laughing, like you can see from this transcript. There was a lot of stuff that came up, and I never got bored with it, which I think, I highly recommend finding something that will get you bored. The R word.
You probably know colleagues of yours who get bored during their dissertation experience. It's painful.
It's like, it's harder to come up with something and like squeeze your brain for something that you care to do. But then there's a plus. This said, we had somebody that dropped out, so nobody knows who he is, who was thinking about doing his dissertation in Japan. You know, about some project that he was really, you know who he is, right? That was really interested in, and the project, that he could go more. And like, he was thinking about doing his dissertation about these 5 people in Japan that may have these symptoms. And he's like, an amazing topic, but really? You want to make it your dissertation that you cannot graduate until you go to Japan and conduct a study in Japanese with people that you can't find and don't get out of their bedroom and don't speak English? Like, you know, at that point, be bored. But don't do that. Yeah, also, he dropped out. So. Maybe he didn't have great judgment. That was his thing, I think. I don't know. He was a lovely person, but no, decided not to become a psychologist.
So. All right, thank you so much.
Any question? Jeff has my email, and I put it at the end. Oh, you, please feel free to have these, and I can email it to you.
Yeah, email it to me, and I'll get it around.
Yes, I'll email it to you. Actually, right? Because I already have my email open. Right? I'll email you this whole thing.
Yeah. Okay. Please. And the PowerPoint too.
Yeah. So it's all together. It's a qualitative dissertation with a sample transcript.
Okay. Yeah, that's true.
Like your. Was this more or less what you were thinking about?
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Okay. I'm glad.